Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay in the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
When I say can you dig it, put your two hands up like that.
Here we go.
It's another week, which means another episode of Can You Dig It, a podcast by Silver Screen and Roll and SB Nation Lakers community. You can find our work over at silverscreenandroll.com. But if you're listening to this podcast, you probably knew that. I'm Christian Rivas, one of your hosts and a contributor at silverscreenandroll.com, and I am here with Jacob Rude. Jacob, how are you doing today, sir? Because I am doing fantastic.
We were talking a bit beforehand, but everything is always more fun, at least, when the Lakers are winning. And the Lakers have won a lot. How's it feel to be the optimistic one here? Because you're the one who predicted they'd go 3-0.
Yeah,
I did.
I
predicted 2-1, and you nailed it.
I did nail it. And that, like, in your defense, I think you were just trying to make things interesting.
Like, well, yeah, and I mean, I was trying. I did not expect Utah looked awful offensively.
Yeah.
Until tonight, but yeah, Utah looked awful offensively. I did not expect them to look that bad.
Mike Conley had like the most low key swag of anybody in the league. Like just the way he played, and then Utah sucked it all out of him. Like moving to Utah,
he's done well tonight. He had 14 in the second or third quarter. I can't remember. I'm pulling up there. We're recording as this game is going on, and yeah, he has
24
on 9 of 14 shooting. So Mike Conley's back.
Good for him. It just takes a few days to shake off that Utah. Like coming to terms with the fact that he's going to have to spend the next, what is it, two seasons there?
I was going to say that Utah nightlife takes a while to get used to, and not for the reasons you think.
90-71, the Jazz currently lead the Clippers. And it, what a weird night in the NBA, by the way. The Warriors are currently up. Or, sorry, not up. They're down 56-83. I'm just so used to the Warriors just running through every team in the league that I set up. But, yeah, no, they're really, really bad. I had them penciled in to my Western Conference like playoff picture just because I thought like a team with Steph Curry, D'Angelo Russell, Draymond Green, and fillers were going to figure it out. Like Steve Kerr was going to figure it out. I do not see any possible way that they make the playoffs, especially if Curry's wrist injury is anything serious. So, yeah, what a weird start to the season this has been, except for everybody but the Lakers, it seems.
I mean, it's been a weird start for the Lakers, but for different reasons. The last couple games have been awesome. It turns out that, I mean, I don't even know, because they lose to the Clippers, and then the Clippers got blown out by Phoenix and then are getting blown out tonight. So, I don't know. It has just been all around a weird start, but I'm glad the weird start leaves us near the top of the conference.
Yeah, and even weirder than that, Lakers fans are cheering for Dwight Howard at Staples Center. And I'm talking loudly. Lakers fans love Dwight Howard. And if we're being real, Jacob, I love Dwight Howard. He's playing so well. He's doing all the little things. Like, everything he said going into the preseason about watching Draymond Green and seeing, like, all the little things he did and wanting to do that for the next team he played for, he's done. Like, he leads the team, if I remember correctly, unless it changed the overnight, he also leads the league in net rating right now. He's awesome.
I'm not even going to pretend like I call or like said anything else. Like, I'll eat crow 100%.
Yeah.
I was very, very wrong. I'm very, very happy to be wrong. I went and did my own Tweetmageddon or Tweetarmageddon last night on myself for all the things I said about Dwight.
Yeah.
In the preseason before the season started and whatnot. And I could not be more wrong. And I could not be more happy to be wrong because he's been awesome. Like, finally, everything he said in the preseason, he's actually following through on. And he's just been awesome. I was trying to see. So, yeah, of guys who have actually played rotation minutes, Dwight is first in the league in net rating at 34.4.
Yeah, that's insane. That is insane. I personally also did not think Dwight Howard was going to make as big of an impact as he did. My caveat with Dwight was always if he can stay healthy and if he can actually mature, and both of those things seemed unlikely. The former of those two things is still to be determined, but, I mean, obviously everybody's knocking on wood, hoping that he has a healthy season. But the latter seems to be working out, like, pretty smoothly so far. I'm interested to see how it progresses when Kyle Kuzma gets back and the traditional center rotation probably takes a hit. Somebody's losing minutes. Shouldn't be Dwight, to be clear, but, I mean, the minutes got to come from somewhere. And that's probably something we should start the show talking about, kind of just set it in passing. But Kyle Kuzma, according to Shams Charania of The Athletic, is expected to make his regular season debut for the Lakers on Friday against the Dallas Mavericks. Kuzma, of course, suffered a stress reaction while competing for a roster spot on the FIBA Basketball World Cup roster in August. He has not been able to play full contact like basketball since, but he was on assignment with the South Bay Lakers on Wednesday, went through a good practice, will have practice on Thursday, and barring any setbacks, Kuzma will take the floor with LeBron James and Anthony Davis on Friday, which is a really nice sentence to speak.
Yeah, he's going to be... It's wild to think how well the Lakers have been playing without him, arguably, if not their third, probably their fourth best player. He is going to still even unlock a whole bunch of things for what this offense can do. For how well the Lakers have been playing, most of it has been on the defensive end. They've just been unbelievable on the defensive end. And offensively, it's kind of been rough. He'll be able to come in, spread the floor, do some shot creation, especially if what we saw during the summer is basically the real Kyle Kuzma now, and he's actually progressed. It'll be big. It's wild to think about. He was just kind of a, I don't want to say an afterthought, but I the last couple games, I haven't really been thinking about Kuzma while watching these Laker games.
Yeah, and I think like I haven't been thinking about Kuzma either, but I've subconsciously thought about how much the Lakers would benefit from like a big forward that can create their own shot and make plays for others. I mean, that secondary playmaker Lakers fans have been talking about all season. And we don't know if Kuzma is that yet, but from what he showed at the tail end of last season and everything he talked about in the offseason, he really did push to become that playmaker. And that's really going to be the key for him to be an extremely valuable player. I think any guy that can put up 20 points per game off the bench is obviously a valuable player. But obviously, if you can be a multi-dimensional player, teams love that. And especially the Lakers. I mean, they have scorers in theory with Quinn Cook, Troy Daniels, just guys that can shoot the heck out of the ball. But as far as somebody that can make plays, I mean, I guess you have Rajon Rondo and Alex Caruso off the bench, but Caruso's minutes have been fluctuating, and I mean, Rondo isn't healthy, and when he is, you know, the jury's out on him. So the hope is that Kuzma can be that player, and I genuinely don't see any reason why he can't be. He seems to have put a lot of work in the summer, and if you can say a lot of things about Kyle Kuzma, but the one thing you can absolutely say about him is that dude works real hard. And when you work as hard as he does, I just think those types of guys just usually figure it out. And he's pretty damn talented too.
He's going to give the Lakers, we talked a little bit about it last week, just having a wing out there, kind of a 3-4, 4-3, however you want to classify him. Because right. there's been a lot of times, not a lot, there's been a few times this year where the Lakers have run some four guards around the AD. I think it was like Quinn Cook and Bradley and Troy Daniels and KCP around Anthony Davis. Which it's worked, but I don't know how sustainable that is. Having somebody like Kuzma, who's probably better than all those other guys not named AD, right. having him out there, having a bigger player, a forward, will just kind of change some of the things the Lakers are able to do in their rotation. I don't know who takes the biggest step back in terms of minutes. If I had to guess, maybe Troy Daniels, but it's not like they're a like-for-like position, so I'm not really right. sure who takes the biggest step back in terms of minutes.
I'd have to think it's JaVale.
With how he's playing, yeah, definitely.
That's going to be really interesting. And the thing I personally am most interested in seeing, though, is I think logically you can make the argument that Kyle Kuzma is going to be the most valuable as a tertiary option to LeBron James and Anthony Davis, because why wouldn't he be? He's really good at moving off the ball. If he can rediscover the shooting stroke he had in his rookie season, he's going to be that guy you want in the corners. If defenders respect him because of his reputation for a shooter, despite the numbers not being there, he's a guy that has enough tricks in his basket to beat a guy off the dribble. So I think that's pretty obvious. I think he's going to be great next to Anthony Davis and LeBron James. What I'm most interested in seeing is whether or not he can be that guy to take charge of the second unit and be that player. Everybody thinks that the second unit is missing right now when LeBron James and Anthony Davis aren't on the court. And really giving Frank Vogel the luxury to not play those guys as many minutes as they're playing right now, which, I mean, isn't that much. It's like 33.2 and 32.5 minutes, respectively, for Anthony Davis and LeBron James.
Yeah, he'll take a big burden off them for a lot of reasons, like you said. Less of a scoring burden, which they haven't needed to do quite as much since that Clippers game. It'll be interesting to see how he fits into the lineup, especially. I don't think he'll start, but kind of those closing lineups, mm-hmm. how defenses treat him, because obviously LeBron and AD are going to be the focus. You're not going to leave Danny Green open. And if LeBron and AD are the focus, it'll be interesting to see how Kuzma, how many open shots he gets. He didn't shoot well on them last year, how he kind of reacts to those, and how he kind of, like you said, he plays well off the ball. He cuts well. If he can find those open spaces and kind of play off LeBron and AD and see what the offense... I mean, in general, I think he just opens some things up for him offensively that...
Absolutely.
Yeah. ...that they really need.
And I tweeted this out earlier, but I do not see why Kyle Kuzma can't average 20 points per game this season. Like... Playing off of Kyle Kuzma and Anthony Davis, if he's going to average like 30-something minutes per game like he did last season as their sixth man, which is the expectation right now, I don't see a scenario in which he starts, because that involves playing Anthony Davis at the center. And if there's anything that's been talked about this season, it's the fact that Anthony Davis doesn't want to play center. Excuse me. I don't see him starting. I think he'll play that sixth man role pretty nicely. Frank Vogel's already said that having Kyle Kuzma back will probably make it more enticing to play Anthony Davis at the center, which I'm guessing means JaVale will probably be that first sub off the bench, with AD moving to the five and Kuz moving to the four or three, and then obviously LeBron would either stay or move up. So a lot of interesting lineups they can use. Defensively is where I think the biggest concern is. But I think if he becomes that multidimensional player on offense, like as a playmaker, his shortcomings on defense become less of like a massive problem.
And with, I mean, depending on the lineups he's used in, the way Dwight's playing defensively, the way AD's playing defensively, it's not hard to be a just an average defender. Don't give up. And he's never been a guy who hasn't worked hard, like you said. So effort really shouldn't be an issue. If you can just kind of keep guys, stay attached to guys, don't give up open looks, kind of funnel them to the rim where Dwight and AD are, you should do fine. I mean, like I said, Quinn Cook has played big minutes. KCP struggled. Jared Dudley's played a bunch. Troy Daniels played a bunch. And the defense has still been incredible. So they can get by with some of these lesser defensive lineups when Dwight and AD are playing as well, protecting the rim as they are. And that's kind of, I mean, we talked about it a bit in the preseason, but that's kind of the benefit of having some of these like twin tower lineups is that right. You're always going to have people at the rim to protect it. And when one guy goes for the block, the other one's there for the rebound to clean it up. So most times it's been Dwight going for a block, then AD can get a grab-and-go rebound. So if he can just, I mean, show the effort he has, I'm not nearly as worried about his defense just because of how well Dwight and AD have looked. It's so wild. It's just, I know we talked about it already. Dwight, there was a moment last night where Dwight was leading MVP chants for Anthony Davis at the foul line in 2019, and I was like giggling watching it.
Absolutely insane. I didn't expect, like, I think I said earlier in the season, I don't see how Dwight Howard could be any less impactful than Tyson Chandler at, like, whatever age he is. I think he's 35. But I did not expect him to be this impactful. I mean, he's been an absolute monster on the offensive boards, which the Lakers haven't had in quite some time. Somebody that gets after it on the boards like he does. He looks more comfortable in his own skin with every game, just like physically. He looks more mobile. So he's starting to catch those lobs. Like, I remember the first game of the preseason, he looked like he had no lift. And I was like, oh no, we got the washed version of Dwight. And obviously he doesn't have the same lift that he used to, but he can still get up some. And he looks quicker. He looks pretty good defending in space, which I did not expect. Like, who did the Lakers play last? Was it Utah? No. Memphis. Sorry. Mm-hmm. When they were playing Memphis yesterday, I think DeLon Wright took it out and was trying to blow by Dwight Howard. Or DeLon Wright doesn't play for the Grizzlies anymore. Anyway, somebody was taking it from outside, tried to blow by Dwight Howard, and he just stayed in front of him like the entire possession, which is not something Dwight Howard, or at least the Dwight Howard that everybody knows, does.
He's still playing himself into shape, which you can forgive. He sat out basically the entirety of last season. It's been weird because JaVale was the one playing so well in the preseason. He started off really well. And yeah, I was very worried about Dwight watching the preseason. He had no lift. He looked washed. And as the season's gone along, it went from like they're both playing well to now Dwight's the one that's like shining bright and might have a case for being in the starting lineup. And JaVale, I mean, I thought the Memphis game was the worst one he's played yet. Yeah. And it's only getting worse. I don't know if he's kind of looking over his shoulder. I know there were the reports last year that Zubat's playing so well, JaVale was not pleased, and that played maybe some part in getting him traded. I don't know if he doesn't handle competition well, but he's going to have to figure something out because this isn't a case where they're going to trade Dwight like they did Zubat's. If he doesn't get it figured out, he's going to the bench. But yeah, Dwight has looked better and better. He's playing himself more and more into shape. And yeah, he's made a couple of those plays where he's stayed in front of guards or cut off some of those drives to the rim and made blocks. He had one where I can't remember who he went flying over top of. I think it was last night and rolled all the way to the bench. And again, like I find myself laughing at Dwight. I could not have in a million years predicted this. I was so staunchly against how Dwight left LA, and it took all of the season's, 10 days old?
Yeah.
And I've completely forgiven him. Like, yeah. what a weird timeline we're on right now.
It truly is. And I remember, I mean, even going back to October, I remember there was a report that Dwight Howard had said that he wanted to improve on, or sorry, one of the questions they asked him before signing on was, does he feel confident being able to guard guys like Joel Embiid on the perimeter? And I laughed, like an audible laugh reading that report. And I don't know if he can. I think very few guys can defend Joel Embiid. Certainly not John Collins. He got baptized the other day. But yeah, I don't know if that's true, but definitely bench bigs. I think if you ranked all of the backup centers in the league, right now with the way Dwight Howard's playing, he's probably top five. So I hope that's sustainable. And then when we get back from our little break, we'll talk about themes from the Lakers season that are sustainable or that can be sustainable. And then we will preview the week ahead for Los Angeles. Jacob, the Lakers are on a 3-game winning streak. They are, after losing to the Clippers, they have not lost a single game this season. Unless I'm forgetting a game, which I'm sure I am. Every day feels like a blur. Feels like it's been an 82 game season, and it's only been like less than 2 weeks. None of the games outside of the Clippers have been particularly close.
Well, they haven't been close in the second half.
Yeah,
a couple of them have been close in the first half.
Oh, that Memphis game made no sense to me.
Charlotte one was bad too.
Yeah, what are they? I don't know. And not, I was going to say it's because they play Alex Caruso in the second half, but Alex Caruso didn't play until like garbage time against Memphis. So
he played a bit in the first half. He didn't look great, but I don't know what it is. I mean, the Memphis game, obviously, it was AD going absolutely bonkers, which, good Lord, that man was. Yeah. That was fun to watch. I was laughing every time he went to the line, and the brief thought of like, well, this is what Harden does came into my mind. Then I like quickly got rid of it to make sure I wasn't thinking that. But that was so fun, that game. He saved us in. I mean, Caruso kind of turned the tide against the it was a Jazz game. I don't know what it is about this team starting out so slow. But it's been fun, those second halves to watch. So if I said something wasn't sustainable, I don't think they're going to win every game after the Clippers game, although I'm happy to be wrong about that too.
Yeah, it could be recency bias. But I genuinely, as I was watching that game on Tuesday, or was it Tuesday? Yeah. As I was watching that game on Tuesday, I could not, like, recall the last time Staples Center was that rocking. Like, not even last year with LeBron James can I think of a time that Staples Center was that loud to the point where, like, on my TV, I could say, like, wow, the stadium's really, really loud. Like, they love Anthony Davis.
The one I remember from last year, which there might be others that listeners are screaming at us, the Spurs game early in the year that went into overtime where LeBron hit that wild three from like 30 feet away, and then he had that and one in overtime where like Josh Hart saved the ball and Lonzo saved it from going out of bounds, and yeah, he had the and one and turned to the crowd. But that's the only time I can remember Staples Center being that loud in a long, long time.
Because they were loud, Jacob.
And very loud. Taco Tuesday, too.
Yeah. They were into it. And, I mean, whether you're a Clippers fan or a Lakers fan, you're probably a Lakers fan if you're listening to this podcast. Can't imagine a Clippers fan listening to this podcast. That's just fun. Like, the fact that Los Angeles basketball is in a good place again is great for the league. And especially when you have a superstar player like Anthony Davis. 40 points and 20 rebounds is an insane stat line. Like, I think he put something close to that up against the Lakers last season, which was Zubac's breakout game against the Pelicans. Anthony Davis still went off. They ended up winning that game. But let me pull that up really quick, because I know I remember leaving that game like, yeah, the Lakers won, but Anthony Davis had a really good night, and I hope the Lakers trade everybody for him. It was 15 rebounds and 30 points. Not exactly 40-20, but not too far off either. And the most insane thing about it was how many damn free throws he shot. And I did not know until after the game that Dwight Howard held the previous record for most free throw makes by somebody wearing a Lakers jersey.
I remember the game that he did that. I'm almost certain it was in Orlando.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I remember they were doing the Hack of Dwight all night long. That game lasted forever. I don't even really have words for how good Anthony Davis was last night. He did all that with a bum shoulder too. He just relentless. Like the way he kept attacking the rim, knowing that, like, there were a couple times I pointed out it. I mean, I'm sure most people noticed it. He wasn't even letting guys pull him up, like, with his right arm.
Yeah.
When he fell to the ground. He kept having them only pull him up with his left arm. That shoulder wasn't in great condition.
Especially not to be shooting free throws that often. Like, I go to the gym, not regularly at all, but when I do, I'll just shoot free throws and I'll take shots. And by, like, the 20th shot, I'm just like, all right, well, it's time to go home. And that may very well be because I'm washed.
I was going to say, when I look at you, I don't necessarily think of Anthony Davis. Hope that's not offensive.
No, definitely not. But, man, to shoot that many free throws on a bum shoulder, I don't imagine. I feel like from a physical standpoint, that still puts him above me and my regular people's shoulders, but just barely. Like, I feel like that is an uncomfortable situation to be in.
I really hope this isn't what we have to do every game. I know it's kind of comes with the territory of having Anthony Davis, where you have to consistently worry about his health. I tried to look that he tore the labrum in his other shoulder a few years back. He doesn't really have a history with his shoulder, so I'm hoping it's just something minor. Every time he goes down, I get a little bit worried. And man, that guy goes. He goes flying to the ground a lot. Pete pointed it out, but that man, for a guy as tall and as coordinated as he is, I don't want to say loses his balance, but he does something all the time where he ends up on the ground, and it worries the hell out of me.
Oh, no. Well,
yeah, I saw that.
Little break in the pod. Steph Curry suffered a broken left hand Thursday night. I mean, the tweet's since been deleted, but I mean, I can't imagine. Oh, no, it's still
there. I was going to say, it's still up.
Yeah. That is horrible. Steph Curry is probably the greatest shooter I've seen in my lifetime.
I mean, I think he just is the greatest shooter.
Yeah, and he's my favorite point guard in the league, so. Wow, that is horrible.
Is D'Angelo on the trade block now?
Probably.
I mean, they can't trade him till December 15th.
December 15th, yeah. Man, that sucks. Injuries are horrible, man. Like, I remember watching the NBA Finals this year and just wanting the Warriors to lose so bad and rooting for the Raptors. But as soon as Kevin Durant, like, my girlfriend, it's a long story, but she has, like, this weird fascination with Canada. She loves Canada so much. And so when the Raptors made the finals, like, she was so stoked, got a shirt and everything. I watched it with her. Really wanted the Raptors to win. And she was, like, genuinely confused as to why I was so, like, devastated that Kevin Durant got hurt. And it's, like, you get these type of talents every once in a generation, like specifically with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, two of the most dominant scorers we've ever, like, the league has ever seen. Not even, like, in my lifetime, the league. So, man, that sucks. Like, regardless of how you feel about the Warriors, like, not having Steph Curry in the league is bad for the league.
It particularly sucked last year because not only is KD a once-in-a-generation talent, I mean, when he first went down, he was playing definitely the best he's ever played in Golden State and, like, some of the best basketball he's ever played. And to see a peak guy at his peak powers, especially in a playoff environment, really sucked. And, I mean, the same with Steph. Steph tonight, he's... I don't really know how anybody roots against him. He's such a fun guy to root for and to watch play. And, I mean, he's changed the way the league works. Like, he's changed the league but with his shooting. So, as you said, it's always fun to see those guys play. It sucks that he's not going to be around. I don't know how long he's going to be out, but this Warriors season was already terrible, and it's only going downhill now.
And I guess that's the bright side, because I had tweeted earlier that I felt bad for Steph, that he was going to have to play every game he was healthy for, because I saw an infographic of the season ticket prices at Chase Center. My God. I do not make enough in a year to afford what they're charging at Chase Center. It's ridiculous. So, of course, they're going to make him play. But, like, realistically, they probably weren't going to make the playoffs. I mean, we talked about it before the break. Before we even started recording. I don't know what I thought. I thought maybe they were going to figure it out. But, yeah, it doesn't look like it. That team's pretty bad. They're going to look even worse without Curry. And I have no idea what they do with D'Angelo Russell now. Like, I think he is on the block, but I think timing's everything with that. Do they wait until next season when they have, like, a top five pick and they can package that with D'Angelo Russell? Or do they get long-term contracts for him now, pieces that can help them rebuild? Because that was a big thing with that Russell signing this past summer is, like, if nothing else, even if they don't plan on keeping D'Angelo Russell, they don't have cap space to add talent. So having that contract is going to be huge for them. Even if, like, they don't have the assets because they gave up all their picks for Andre Iguodala. But if I'm not mistaken, they have next year's pick. So that's something.
The Warriors confirmed that he did break his hand, so it's not a rumor. It's not sourced or anything. It's officially from them. It's a bummer. It's a really big bummer. I mean, looking at it for the Lakers, I mean, we're going to play them in about 2 weeks or so. They were going to be one of... I had at the time, I thought would be one of the tougher games, so I don't know what to make of this team now. I would say that D'Angelo would be on the trading block and you try to shed some contract and get that payroll as low as you can because they're not going to be anywhere close to contending. I don't think they trade Draymond because they just signed him to an extension. But
he's on a team-friendly contract, but I don't know if there's a player as impactful as Draymond that makes what he does. Like, I don't... It's hard to, like, gauge what equal value is for Draymond because he's such, I don't want to say a divisive player.
But I would describe him as that.
And it's certainly hard to, like, quantify his value without the eye test, I think. I don't know. I think, the silver lining that we'll end this on is next season, the Warriors are going to have, that, like, Lord willing, a healthy Steph Curry, a healthy Klay Thompson, a healthy Draymond Green, a top five pick and D'Angelo Russell, or whatever they got from a top five pick and D'Angelo Russell. So,
I would imagine Minnesota is going to come calling very soon about about D'Angelo Russell because they got him stolen right out from under him. I don't know what they would include.
Yeah, I was thinking, I know... Like, I had suggested in the off season a Jeff Teague, a package built around Jeff Teague and Robert Covington. But with the way D'Lo's been playing to start the season, don't know if the Timberwolves would do that trade anymore, if we're being real. Like, before I assumed they'd have to include a pick to get that done. Now I don't even know if that alone gets it done.
I guess it depends on what Golden State wants to do. Well,
I thought you were going to say Cat.
Well, Cat is going to, I think, be down with any trade that gets him D'Lo. I was going to say Golden State because, I mean, Teague would just clear out space. I guess Robert Covington's under contract. When I'm thinking of that trade, I was thinking it more of like a, they can help them win now. And I don't know if that'll be the same mindset. They have all their picks. Maybe it's just a couple firsts and Jeff Teague to help replenish what they lost when they traded away Iggy. I don't know. I'd be surprised if D'Angelo's on this roster after whenever the trade deadline is. By All-Star Week, I'd be surprised if he's on this roster still.
Well, I feel bad for Northern California basketball fans because everything is good in SoCal, and it's not just the Warriors that suck. It's the Sacramento Kings. Like, I'm even gonna front. I defended Luke Walton. I thought he was a scapegoat for like whatever the Lakers had going on, particularly with Magic Johnson at the top. And I rode for him. And he's been, like, awful. Like, the Kings looked like they were on the brink of making a breakout this season. I loved their offseason. Loved their young pieces. I think Darren Fox and Buddy Hield had, like, the talent to be in the conversation to be the best backcourt in the NBA in a few years. Obviously, when everybody ages out. Luke Walton has made them look like Tyler Ennis and God, who I can't even
Jabari
think of
Brown.
That team. Yeah,
Jabari Brown and Tyler Ennis in that backcourt.
Yeah, it was. It's bad. They're 0-5 right now, and they could be 0-6 by the end of the night.
No, I think that is. They're 0-5. That's okay. Updated. Well, and the problem with Sacramento is that they're already paying Dave Yeager, who they fired, and they signed Luke Walton to a 4-year deal. I don't think they're going to fire him anytime soon.
No,
but
they got
to
stick it out. I don't know how deep the Kings owners' pockets are, but don't imagine that.
I want to know what kind of odds we could have gotten on Phoenix being the third best team in the Pacific Division. Because, I mean, Phoenix looks legit, and Golden State looks awful. Sacramento looks awful. Like, maybe Phoenix is going to make a... Because, I mean, Golden State, everybody, a lot of people penciled into the playoffs. Sacramento was right there. Like, suddenly the playoff picture is looking a lot different. San Antonio probably has a good chance now. Dallas has looked good.
I'm stupid. I, for the third consecutive year, I had the Spurs missing the playoffs. I just never learned. No, I feel like nobody ever learns, but me specifically. Somebody that claims to be somebody smart enough to write about basketball, I know nothing specifically about the Spurs and their basketball wizardry they have going on over there.
Listen, looking at the roster, I don't think I'd blame you. It's a really, really odd roster. And LaMarcus Aldridge has taken more threes than DeMar DeRozan. There's some pieces there I like. Somehow Rudy Gay is still, like, decent. And I thought his career was dead, like, 5 years ago. I don't know. They have a really odd roster that is working for him. And then they have Pop doing his little voodoo, wizardry, magic, whatever it is he does.
Yeah.
They're probably going to be in the playoff picture now, too.
Before we get back to Lakers basketball, which is what we get paid to talk about, if the Warriors and Kings, who were my picks for the 7th and 8th seed in the Western Conference, if those teams don't make the playoffs, just judging by the small sample size we have right now and, like, on talent alone, who's going to fill out that 7th and 8th spot?
Probably San Antonio and Dallas. Minnesota is technically 3-1. I don't see them hanging around. Maybe Portland. I really like Luka and Porzingis.
Portland is in one of my my playoff spots already. So my top six are in order, and this may change as the season goes on.
Next week for those keeping track.
The order going into the season was Nuggets, Clippers, Rockets, Jazz, Lakers, Trailblazers, and then Warriors, Kings to round out the top eight. I think it could very well be the Spurs and the Mavericks at that 7 and 8 spot. Because, yeah, like you said, Luka and Porzingis look great. Luka looks even better than he did last season. Like, the game has slowed down for him even more.
Yeah, if that was your... if that's your six, then yeah, I think Dallas would be almost a lock, barring injury. I don't even know who'd really contend with that. Maybe OKC. Their only win right now, though, is the Warriors. Maybe Sacramento gets it turned around. I mean, like, they would have the most talent out of any of those teams, I think. I don't know how far this is going to fall before they turn it around. So I think Dallas is probably a lock, and... I mean, I guess I'll just go down with the ship with the Spurs and say that they're going to make the playoffs until they don't.
I thought the Pelicans were going to make a run for it, and then Zion got hurt, and then...
If Zion hadn't got hurt, I think that would be a legitimate case, but that team has already suffered a bunch of injuries, even though Ingram is playing out of his mind right now.
Playing really well. We looked for this next segment we were going to do, just leaders in the league and stuff. And Brandon Ingram shooting 50% from three on like 7.3 attempts. Nuts.
Yeah, and it's not even like Danny Green's up there too, but Danny Green had the one really good game against the Clippers. Ingram's just been consistent all throughout. And he finally looks like, maybe it's small sample size, but it feels watching him like something's finally clicked.
Yeah.
And he's just been incredible this year.
He just looks so much more confident in his shooting ability. Like, he's always looked good as somebody attacking the rim. I think he just knows he's a lot longer than everybody and can attack the rim at will. But as a shooter, like, he shot a lot of mid-range jumpers with the Lakers. But I think it wasn't on the forefront of his mind. It was always get to the rim or pass it out. This year, it's I have the ball, I'm going to put it up, which... I mean, I think he's only finished with a positive in the box score once this season for that reason. But he's been stuffing the box score, and so shout out to Brandon Ingram. That backcourt of Lonzo Ball and Drew Holiday is a lot worse on defense than I think anybody imagined. I mean, Holiday's not healthy right now, but they've both been horrid on defense to start the season.
I don't know what to make of it, because Drew has had his moments, especially the Toronto game. I thought he defended Lowry really well, but Lonzo, he's got to, figure out... He's really good at flying around and creating havoc and getting deflections and whatnot, but it sometimes leads to leaving his man open and things like that, or losing his guy. And he's got to kind of find that balance. They have a lot of issues right now. They have almost too many guys.
Yeah.
I know you mentioned today, I don't know if you're going to talk about it, about Windhorst saying that the Lakers wanted a wing defender and ball handler. I don't know if he necessarily fits either of these, but Etuan Moore is just not playing on that team.
Yeah.
Through the first four games, and he's legitimately good.
They have so many guards. It's Frank Jackson, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, or Nickeil. I got heat on Twitter for comparing him to Jordan Clarkson, but he's
lived up to that. I tweeted that. I didn't know you tweeted. I said there's so much Jordan Clarkson and Nickeil Alexander-Walker.
Right. I think Grant Goldberg tweeted it too. Like, it's there. Any Lakers fan that watched Jordan Clarkson his rookie season sees it. But yeah, he has a lot of Jordan Clarkson in him. They have J.J., Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball, Frank Jackson, Etuan Moore, Drew Holiday. Just a ton of guards. So, yeah, if New Orleans is having a fire sale, I hope they're interested in a lightly used Kontavious Caldwell-Pope.
I was going to say, we've talked about this beforehand. I don't know what the Lakers can trade or will trade.
Yeah.
I think that's why they're keeping that Boogie contract. I don't know if they have a second round pick this year. If they do, maybe that. Like, I think Etuan Moore, even if it's not the Lakers, will be like a sneaky good pickup for some team, because he's a really good shooter and he's just a solid wing player that, I mean, this was always kind of going to be the case with how many guys the Pelicans had. I think they played 12 guys on opening night and Zion wasn't even one of them.
Yeah.
It's great to have a lot of depth, but there's such thing as too much depth, which is what the Pelicans have right now. So there's some guys, some veterans there that you might be able to nab some of their wings and stick on a playoff team, and that'll be useful. It'll be interesting to see. I still think they're better than their 0-4, I think, right now. I still think they're better than that, but any hopes of the playoffs went out the door when Zion had surgery. So I'll just be interested to see how afloat they can stay before Zion comes back.
How disheartening is it that any trade the Lakers make this season is dependent on a team being highly interested in Kontavious Caldwell-Pope enough to take on a second year of his contract?
It's disheartening to the point that I don't even think about it. I see a lot of people be like, oh, well, you can trade KCP and this and this. And it's like, if we don't want KCP, why would other teams want KCP?
Well, I think the plus side is, if you're a bad team playing a lot of garbage time minutes, Kontavious Caldwell-Pope thrives in those situations.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to send GM's highlights of KCP in garbage time or in late April games or mid-April games the last couple of years, you would think he's worth all the money we've paid him. But, I mean, I said it last week, I still think Lakers Twitter's been a little hard on him. Hopefully he finally broke out, or that little breakout he had against the Grizzlies will get him going, because they could use a wing that can hit threes like that. But I haven't even really considered him. If the Lakers are going to trade anything, it's going to be like Boogie and or JaVale, and I don't even know if there's really much else. Like, it's going to have to be it's not going to be enough to get a high price player. Like, I don't know. Jay Crowder is still the one that I think they could put some pieces together for, but I don't know that they're going to beat anybody else's offer. He would be the wing defender type that Windhorst said. In terms of ball handlers, I don't know. Because they already have so many guards that you would probably have to trade one of them. Maybe you can trade Quinn Cook because he's still kind of young and would be interesting in that regard. I'm not sure how this... They're going to have to get creative if they're going to make a trade.
Before we head out, I'm going to do a condensed version of something we were supposed to spend more time on, but we didn't because of basketball. The Lakers are doing well, as we mentioned, and it doesn't just show up in the wins and losses column. It also shows up in advanced stats, regular stats. They are ninth in the league in offensive rating, which I was surprised to see. Can you guess who is seventh in the league, or eighth? Pardon me.
In offensive rating?
Yeah.
Phoenix might be up there.
No, Phoenix is 12th. The Warriors...
Well, I guess that makes sense. They're probably 30th in defensive rating.
Yeah, with allowing 120 points per 100 possessions.
Oh, my. Yeah.
Like a historically bad defensive team. So we got ninth in offensive rating, fourth in defensive rating for the Lakers, allowing just 96.8 points per 100 possessions. It means a lot of tacos at Staples Center this season if they keep it up. And then first in net rating. We'll leave it at that for now. But between offensive and defensive rating, which one do you think they'll finish in the top 10 in? If I guess the answer is both. Like, ideally, if they're going to be a top three team in the Western Conference, it probably has to be both. but for the sake of this exercise, offensive, defensive rating, which one are the Lakers going to hang their hat on this season?
I would say defense, probably. I think the offense will come around. I mean, I'm a little surprised by how high that offensive rating is right now.
Yeah.
I think it might settle a bit. I think defense is what is going to be this team's calling card through the first week of the season. I mean, they preach it a whole bunch in preseason. They have, like we said, some guys that can protect the rim and create some problems there. Danny Green's really good. Caruso's been really good defensively. They have the guys there that can be solid defenders. So, yeah, I think the offense kind of settles a little bit. I think in general, I mean, it's obviously small sample size. The Clippers are not going to finish the year with a 119.1 offensive rating, just as the Warriors, I don't think, are going to finish the year with a 120 defensive rating. But I think it's more likely that the defense settles inside the top 10 pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I think the good thing, the thing that makes me feel real good about this team is defensively, Frank Vogel is everything that he was like made out to be as a defensive-minded coach. So you add a few actually good defenders to that team, I think they can be special defensively. One trend I did not expect to start the season was the Clippers being 22nd in defensive rating. You look at that makeup on the team, and they should be a lot better defensively than they are. So, again, it's really early in the season. A lot of things can change, but I would be genuinely surprised if the Lakers didn't finish in the top 10 in defensive rating this season. Jacob, before we go, we're going to look at the games ahead for the week and see how we think they're going to go, starting with Friday in Dallas, which could very well be Kyle Kuzma's first game back. How do you see that game going?
Porzingis and Luka will be an interesting matchup, but I would still say the Lakers.
Yep, I think I agree. I'm thinking about their guard depth. It's not a lot. Like, Tim Hardaway Jr. is hot and cold. DeLon Wright, you can say the same thing about him.
I like
Seth Curry. I like Jalen Brunson a lot. I don't know what it is about those Villanova dudes, but they just know how to play basketball. I'd have them winning. I'm terrified to make a pick for Sunday's game against the Spurs because, as we've established, I'm not very good at reading the Spurs. But I think...
That is not a very confident answer. I mean, like I said, just looking at the Spurs team, and it's so odd. I would still say that. I mean, they're a bad matchup for him. Like, they're not gonna. I guess Jakob Poeltl is the starter alongside Aldridge.
Yeah.
They have the depth in the front court. I think Rudy Gay probably is playing power forward.
Poeltl didn't end up getting an extension, huh?
No. A little surprising.
Yeah.
I'm trying to look. Based on games started, I guess their lineup is Aldridge, Lyles, DeRozan, Forbes, and Murray.
Again, what? How? I don't get it. I don't know.
I'm going to pick the Lakers because that's just such an odd roster. I think the Lakers can handle that.
Well, what's funny, and a moment we should all appreciate, is this time last year, the Lakers were scrambling for somebody to defend LaMarcus Aldridge.
Ended
up being Jonathan Williams.
Yeah.
They're saving grace, so.
Where did he was with the Rockets Summer League team. Did he end up signing with them?
I don't think so, but I don't know. I saw him at Summer League and I was like, hey, there's Jonathan Williams, and that was the extent of my interest in that. I know Mo Wagner, as much crap as Magic Johnson got for drafting Mo Wagner, he's looked good with the Wizards. Could be okay player on a bad team situation, but I mean, he's looked all right.
Jonathan Williams is playing in Israel.
Okay, well,
a little surprising. I thought he was decent last year.
I also thought he was decent. If there's a LaMarcus Aldridge in Israel, he's getting locked up by Jonathan Williams right now. The last game the Lakers have before we meet again on Thursday is against the Chicago Bulls at the United Center. I was a lot higher on the Bulls than most people coming into the season. I think mostly because I have an irrational love for Thaddeus Young. I thought that was a weird signing, but, I mean, he went there. It's not a big deal. And I really like Zach LaVine, too. I think he can probably make a case for most improved player if, like, Siakam's out of the running for winning it last season. But I still have them winning that game because, I don't know, why not? 3-0.
If you have the irrational love for Thaddeus Young, are you the creator of that graphic that they showed when he was with the Pacers comparing him to Jordan. Magic, Bird, Jordan, and LeBron? Guys with, I pulled it up, players with 800 games to average 13.5 points, 5.9 rebounds, 1.4 steals, 49% field goals, and 30% threes. The most hand-picked stats in the history of of making a graphic. Somebody put a graphic together for that.
Elite company. No.
Yeah, the Lakers are winning that game too. I think the Bulls have a bright future, but the Lakers, I still don't know who Luke Kornet is, and he's been in the league multiple years, and he's their backup center. Yeah. I think the Lakers win that one comfortably too.
I only know who Luke Kornet is because I played with the Knicks one time, just a random team in 2K, and I don't know what rating he is as a three-point shooter in 2K. I think he might be a B-, and I went off with him to the point where the guy was playing force quit in the third quarter with Luke Kornet. I think if I had to choose the Lakers losing one game, it would probably be against the Mavericks because, again, I think top to bottom, for no other reason, the fact that they play under Greg Popovich, the Spurs probably have like more talent in an offensive system, but they match up better against the Lakers. The Lakers match up better against the Spurs than they do the Mavericks, who have two budding superstars in Luka Doncic and Kristaps Porzingis. So I'm still going 3-0, though. I think the Mavericks game is going to be fun, though, especially if Kuzma plays.
Yeah, it's nice going into that game and not worrying about how we're going to defend Porzingis. Well, we have a unicorn too.
Yeah, we do. We have two if you count. I was trying to think of somebody funny. I was gonna say Kostas, but I can't even talk myself into that one.
I'm down with it.
Well, that's our show for today. If you enjoyed listening to it, head on over to iTunes and leave us a nice little review. I think the most scathing review we've gotten was on Twitter, and somebody accused me, not even you, somebody accused me of being a Clippers homer, which if you say anything like remotely positive about the Clippers, you're a Clippers homer. Adrian Wojnarowski was a mouthpiece for Jerry West in the offseason. So, I mean, that's
how
not
much
all
is
that
Steve
surprising.
Ballmer paying you, Christian?
Yeah. It's not all that surprising. I am going to get heat for a tweet I sent out last week saying I don't know how the Lakers are going to close the gap with the Clippers.
See,
with one game played.
I remembered that, and I was almost going to bring it up tonight, but I was going to let you off the hook.
Yeah, no. I mean, I totally get it. I'm not. I understand it was early in the season to tweet that, but my logic was, and it could be flawed logic. I could be wrong, but that team, as constructed, like just on paper, match up so well with the Lakers, because they have everything the Lakers don't. Like, whether it's two games into the season, which it was when I tweeted it, or like 70 games into the season, barring trades, they're still going to have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George in the starting lineup, and Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell in the second unit. Like, that's a good team that I don't see slowing down. And I think the Lakers have the best duo out of both of them. I think that's pretty clear. I just don't know if with the roster as constructed, and people are going to accuse me as me using this as a mechanism to walk back later in the season, and maybe I am subconsciously. But with the roster as constructed right now, if you listed the most talented players between the Lakers and the Clippers, top to bottom, I think the Clippers would have more players in the top 10.
I mean, maybe, but they've been really bad defensively the last three nights. So I mean,
but they're adding Paul George, and that's what I always go back to when talking about this team, and that's assuming that Paul George fits in seamlessly with the team, which is assuming a lot, because anytime you add a superstar, it's tough unless you have two of the most dynamic players in the league in LeBron James and Anthony Davis. I don't know. Can't relate when it comes to superstars not gelling, but I don't know. I'm really high on the Clippers. I think they're going to be a very good basketball team. I think what people read when I say that, though, is that I'm rooting for the Clippers. And, like, I'd be happy to be wrong about them. I'd be remiss to look at the Clippers and just go, LOL, little brother Clippers, same team they've always been. They have a good coach, a good roster. They're going to be fun matchups. And again, I hope I am wrong about the Lakers, and I hope that gap is much smaller than I perceive it to be.
Good thing is that first or second game hot takes definitely never come back to bite you. Shout out to Anthony and Brandon Ingram. Show me one NBA skill.
But you know what? I will say, most of my takes have aged pretty well. The biggest I've ever gotten ratioed on Twitter was two games into last season.
So you didn't learn your lesson.
Yeah, no, I didn't learn. Well, okay, the reason I didn't learn my lesson is because I was right. Somebody tweeted, or I tweeted, not somebody. I'm trying to pin the blame on somebody else. I tweeted out that I would trade Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram for Damian Lillard in a heartbeat. If Portland came calling, I would do that trade 9 times out of 10. And I got, ratioed hard on that tweet. And I understand that most of them were, kind of durr Lakers fans. But it was more than I expected. People were telling me I was insane for even suggesting that Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram combined were worth Damian Lillard. Lillard's probably a top 5 MVP candidate for me this season.
Yeah, well, at least you didn't do it in the middle of a game going into the fourth quarter, trash talking Damian Lillard, and then have to leave Twitter. Shout out Harrison. I'm just throwing them all under the bus tonight.
Yeah, let's go. Boom, roasted. Who's next?
Boom, roasted.
But yeah, again, a lot of my tweets haven't aged terribly.
You just delete those.
No, I don't. I have not. You know what tweet I haven't deleted? And I don't imagine any Clippers fans are listening to this. But the day, literally, Jacob, hours before it was announced Kawhi Leonard signed with the Clippers, there was a tweet prompt that said, name something that people overrate. And I put the Clippers as a free agent destination, and it got a whole bunch of retweets, from Lakers fans, oh, we got them. And then hours later, Kawhi Leonard signs with the Clippers. I have not deleted it yet, and it is truly a miracle that nobody's dug it up yet. That might be a testament.
I'll work on that.
That may be a testament to lack of general interest in our Twitter account, which I hope isn't the case because I send most of the tweets from there. And we crossed 50,000 followers on there. Not that anybody was watching. I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, again, I hope I'm wrong. I think both teams are very good. And I've been encouraged from what I've seen since the Clippers game with the Lakers.
It's a fun time to be a Lakers fan. I'm actually looking forward to games instead of dreading them as I have in years past.
Well, with that, we will end our show. Thanks for joining me, Jacob. And thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next week.